Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrer.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, from Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's congressional address to Obamacare arguments at the Supreme Court, Washington is turning out lots of news this week, and we'll get an update.
First, a report released yesterday by the Department of Justice found sweeping patterns of racial bias within the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department. While the report only focused on Ferguson, some of the issues it raises are ones facing departments across the country.
The report comes the same week as new policing recommendations from a federal task force appointed by President Obama. But as police departments grapple with these complex issues, are we already starting to see a softer approach to policing across the country? And just how difficult is it for police to tackle some of the issues brought up in the Ferguson report?
Joining us now is Peter Moskos. He's an associate professor at the City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He's in the Department of Law, Police Science, and Criminal Justice Administration. He's also a former Baltimore City police officer. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So we've got these two reports, the Ferguson one and the policing one. There's going to be a lot of discussion in the coming weeks about how policing could or should change. But even before these came out, were you seeing changes from the police departments across the country when it came to these issues?
You do constantly see police departments trying to address these issues. A lot of the problem, though, is getting good ideas down through the rank and file officers. I mean, there's a matter of changing police culture, and that's a bit tougher to do than a presidential commission.
Is there in many departments a culture, pervasive racism is one of the phrases used in reference to Ferguson. Is this something unique to Ferguson, maybe a few other places, or is this an issue that we're grappling with all over the country?
I think it's less of an issue than a lot of people think it is. You know, I can't speak for Ferguson. I haven't been there. I don't know it. And maybe they got problems that are particularly bad. Well, they do have problems that are particularly bad. A lot of those problems don't just relate to police, though. They relate to the courts, and they relate to the democratic process or lack thereof. So in some ways, police are becoming the scapegoats for greater issues of race and poverty in America, which isn't necessarily fair to police. But I can't particularly, you know, I don't know the Ferguson Police Department. I do know the police department. I was in Baltimore City. I'm very familiar with the New York City Police Department. And my short answer is no, that the problem is not racism among police officers.
So if we see disparities, say, in arrests by race or police shootings by race, things like that, what do you point to as the problem if it's not something within the culture of policing?
Well, disparities in violent crime by race, and a lot of that is linked to poverty, but there are those disparities. I mean, the Department of Justice report, those numbers in and of themselves don't mean anything because we don't know, they're not telling us what the rate of violent crime is in Ferguson by rate. I mean, we do know, based on, unfortunately, not very good data, but, you know, the per capita, the odds of police officers getting killed by a black suspect are greater than the chance of police officers killing a black suspect. So there's some parity there. Now, this doesn't still, there are greater problems. Why do these disparities exist at all? But just to say cops are more likely to arrest black people doesn't mean anything without knowing other factors, specifically crime.
Do you see police officers as embattled, maybe unfairly, and that making it harder for them to do their jobs?
Well, the cops are always going to feel embattled, and you know, there's nothing cops like more than complaining. You know, the two things they complain about are change and the way things are. So to some extent, that's nothing new. And then, look, most of they're professionals, and they're going to go to work and do their job by and large. But that whole issue of we really have a sort of a, mostly, not so much in Madison necessarily, but you have a blue-collar police culture that is really now the weight of societies of hundreds of years of racial discrimination, of oppression, are sort of being placed on the backs of police officers. It's not quite clear what they're supposed to do. I mean, by and large, they're answering calls for service, and they're going to where those calls of service are. By and large, they're patrolling where violent crime is, which is, does then give you more traffic stops in minority neighborhoods, for instance. But that's not the individual officer saying, I'm just going out and trying to harass minorities.
Are there procedural changes that could be made at police departments, especially ones that deal with high crime areas, maybe areas with minority populations, that make the kind of headline-grabbing friction less likely to happen in the first place?
Yeah, probably. I mean, some of it is, of course, issues happen all the time. There are bad shootings from police towards blacks, their bad shootings towards whites, a lot of those don't make the news. So some of it is a matter of reporting, but absolutely there are things police can do. One of the best things would be to simply get out of the police car more. There should be less reliance on calls for service, which would be a pretty major change in the police department, but, you know, police managed just fine for their first 120 years of existence without the 911 system. But many times now you have police responding to sort of anybody who can pick up a phone. So the police becomes the armed state agent of an individual citizen's bad judgment or racism. So if you get cops out of cars more, give them a geographic beat, and once they get to know people and in that community, you'll find both a better attitude by police who aren't constantly just dealing with people having horrible days, but you also find better attitudes in the community once they get to know the police officer as a human being and realize what they're trying to do.
Now, this kind of neighborhood policing, we're hearing, I think more police departments make the case that they need more of that. Is that a trend nationwide?
No, they talk a good game. I mean, the problem is there are limited resources, and you have generally half of police departments are assigned to patrol, which means sitting in cars waiting for people to call the police department. At some point, we have to sort of de-sell the public that rapid response is essential to police service. I mean, we need it for firefighters. We need it for ambulances if you're having a heart attack. But police just don't get that many calls for crimes in progress so they can zip there quickly and arrest the offender. The focus has to be more on preventing crime. And part of that is getting to know who the players in the community are. And that is a problem sometimes if cops start to see everyone in a certain area, such as Ferguson, because, I mean, they're sort of documented, if police see everyone in a certain area as being part of a criminal class, because that's simply not true. But so to bridge that divide, the best thing you can do is try and get the police officer out of the police car.
Now, talking about a cultural change on the police side, you're talking about a big cultural change on the civilian side, the idea that, no, the main, you shouldn't be calling 911 to summon police unless there's a major crime already in progress.
Well, not even necessarily a major crime, certainly a minor crime, but I'm talking about, you know, my daughter won't go to school, my boyfriend's putting his feet in my hair, both of which are calls I actually received, or you just get calls for an armed person at a bus stop. Well, the person's not armed, but the cops are going to approach with their guns drawn. That is not the way to deal with these problems. I don't think the public realizes just what a large percentage of calls come into the police department, you know, for lack of a better word, by crazy people, reporting burglaries at addresses that don't exist. It's actually calling 911 and hanging up the phone. It's actually a pretty significant part of total call volume, and yet cops have to respond pretty much to each and every one of them.
And these are things where the police might enter the situation thinking that there is potentially danger in progress that maybe raises the risk, I guess, of a bad police-civilian interaction then.
Yeah, and also you have, and this is, I mean, when someone does call the police, generally the information then goes to two people, the operator and the dispatcher, before it goes to the police officer. So certainly from the organizational standpoint, you could devise a better system. Maybe have the caller speak directly to the cop, because often by the time that information gets to the police officer, some key information, like the caller saying, I think it's a toy gun, the cop doesn't get that information. And then you have fatal consequences sometimes.
Do you see any kind of change like that happening? It sounds like it might be a hard sell to the public to change the way 911 is used.
It would be a hard sell, but look, we sold it to the public in the 70s and 80s. We can slowly move. I mean, the public has to see something in return, and that would be, at least in sort of urban environments, would be knowing your beat officer, knowing a cop you can talk to. Often the issues that the public have aren't, you may not think are worthy of calling the cops, but if you know the officer, you can mention, you know, I see those kids hanging around the corner a lot. They're breaking bottles. It's not something maybe you'll call 911 about, but it's something that cops should know about. So the public would have to see something in return, but the idea that a cop is at your beck and call within, you know, 2 to 5 minutes when you pick up the phone, we know it doesn't work when you need it. And it's about, you know, half of police departments are dedicated to that. The other half, specialized units and headquarters and you know, various sort of light duty. But we could try. We could try. You know, Madison historically has had a very progressive police department, so you'd hope that some place like that could do this. There also are departments that simply do it better than other departments. Police shootings are very much related to levels of crime, but, you know, New York City, despite individual incidents that have happened, shoots very few people per capita. I mean, far less than cities like Albuquerque or Riverside, California. So there is a certain thing where you could have best practices. Now, I don't exactly know what they're doing right in New York, and this is the problem, and the system is so decentralized. But certainly there are departments with regard to use of force that we could use as an example. Another problem, if I could mention it, is cops today are trained to use force for compliance issues. And then when cops do that, when they mace or tase somebody because they didn't follow directions, that's horrible. They shouldn't be trained that way. Use of force should be for force situations, for threats. But that's not the way cops are trained today. So this is something where the public does need to say, you know what, we do have civilian oversight of police in this country. Sometimes it's a little hard to use that, but we simply don't want cops tasing people if they don't comply.
We'll leave it there for now. Peter, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
That's Peter Moskos, associate professor at the City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice, also a former Baltimore City police officer.